Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Dr. Stephen Weber. Stephen serves as the Associate Superintendent for Teaching and Learning in Fayetteville Public Schools. Prior to his arrival in Fayetteville, Dr. Weber had more than 20 years of experience in public education. He served as the Executive Director for Curriculum and Instruction with the Chapel Hill Carborough School District, or City Schools in North Carolina. And during his career in public education, he has served as a teacher, assistant principal, principal, director of secondary instruction, and executive director of curriculum and instruction. Dr. Weber serves on the executive cabinet for Fayetteville Public Schools and provides leadership by working with teachers, administrators, and staff. Dr. Weber joined Fayetteville Public Schools in 2016. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to connect with you and invite you on the podcast because I've been following your writing for a while. We've been connected on Twitter as well, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on the recording. Let's start out with the question I ask everybody. Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
There have been several times throughout my career with highs and lows as a teacher, as an assistant principal, and as a assistant superintendent. But this past year had to be one of the most challenging, I think, at every level for everyone involved. So we had to pivot, as most school districts did. And at that point, all central office staff and all teachers were at their home. So there was no communication unless it was a phone call, a text, or Zoom. And so that was very complex. And it was a challenging time in education to try to navigate that. None of us had ever been given a playbook or a blueprint for that in grad school. And our teachers were definitely navigating change on a day-by-day, if not hour-by-hour basis. Some of it was experimentation by fire, and some of it was trial and error. But through it all, we were able to continue with school and continue to teach students, sometimes virtually, sometimes in person, and other times in a hybrid setting.
So explain to me a little bit about your role in the district and kind of how your role in particular, was crucial to just maintaining that continuous instruction and kind of that shift to online instruction as a part of your role in the district.
I'm entering my sixth year with Fayetteville Public Schools, very proud of the district and proud of the teachers and staff that we have. My role was communication, and communication was much easier when we could have face-to-face principal meetings or face-to-face meetings with our teacher leaders and ask questions. But when we had to shift and that was turned into non-face-to-face meetings, it made it difficult for anything from deciding what every student should know and be able to do to deciding common formative assessments, grading practices. But we also were reverting to basic human needs such as food for students, healthcare, finding ways to get students what they needed. Hotspots were very important for students who could not access the assignments via video or via Google Classroom. So We started thinking in ways that maybe we should have been thinking all along, but it put a big spotlight on equity, poverty, and other needs that are just basic human needs. So our teachers rolled up their sleeves and did whatever it took to meet the needs of learners during that time. But communication definitely was a challenge, and good communication is easy. I would say what we were able to build off of our foundation, we had some strong curriculum documents and we had some strong technology integration, and we also had Fayetteville Virtual Academy. So 5 years ago, our school district had the foresight to develop a virtual academy, and now several school districts are doing that in the midst of COVID. So we've had a lot of school districts contact us to say, how do you set up a virtual school? So that was very effective. And in that case, that was one of our 16 schools. That school didn't have to pivot as much. I'm not going to say they had no changes or no shift, but they didn't have to pivot as much because they were already set up and designed for virtual learning. So great principal at that school and great teachers. And I think we leaned on that staff from time to time to ask them, how do you teach in a virtual setting? Because at one point, our school district was 100% virtual.
And so as we enter the 21-22 school year, tell me a little bit about kind of how your district is now shifting back, I would say, to mostly in person, do you still have a little bit of the population or district that is going to that virtual academy this year, or how does that look?
Our virtual academy in Fayetteville is open to K through 12. So we have over 300 students enrolled in K through 12 virtual academy, and the rest of our students are returning to on-site instruction. However, if a student or their family have to go into quarantine, then that student will be learning virtually for the time that they're in quarantine. So we know that throughout this year, we'll continue to have some students learning virtually if they need to go into quarantine, and we're prepared for that. It's challenging. It's very difficult on teachers, but our teachers learned a lot over the past 15 months about teaching and learning, and several of the tools that they learned and things they experimented with, teachers have said, this is going to make me a better teacher in the future. So my hat's off to all classroom teachers around the world, because this is nothing we've ever prepared for. But hopefully in the future, for the next 5 to 10 years, we can really build on a strong foundation. And I know everyone's looking forward to getting back to school on site, and for the pandemic to go away at some point, because teachers know how to teach students on site. But the good thing is we've learned a lot of things about technology integration, blended learning, and the beauty of being able to connect with learners when they're not at school.
Yeah, and I found that really interesting in the fact that, so if a student has to quarantine, they're just going to shift to that online school. So there is a similar curriculum that they're using at the Fayetteville online that they're using in that grade level or the subject area.
There is a very similar curriculum that they use, but we will not shift our students to that school. They will stay with their home school this year. So they would stay with their home school and their learning would be virtual.
Okay. Yeah, that is, I think that's a great option, because in Colorado, we're not really offering, if somebody has to quarantine, any virtual. I think they'll just be doing like asynchronous Google Classroom instruction. You know, most districts here as well do have some type of an online academy, but that's like a separate enrollment if you were to go to that. So, and could you tell me a little bit about the size of your district? And also, I thought it was interesting in the pre-chat, just kind of the population. You have a lot of college families and people that work at the university as well.
Yes, we have nearly 10,500 students in Fayetteville Public Schools. And we have 16 schools, one of them being Fayetteville Virtual Academy. It is in the same city as Fayetteville, University of Arkansas, Fayetteville, Arkansas. And so it is a university town, as you referenced. We have several university professors' children. We also have children of parents who move here to go to school or grad school. And we also have families who move here from all over the world. We're located near Tyson, J.B. Hunt, and Walmart. So there are some major corporations in Northwest Arkansas that bring families in. And this is year in, year out, ranked one of the top three communities or top three cities in America to live by different magazines and organizations. So it is a growing population. It's not as big as a Chicago or a Dallas or a Memphis, but it is a growing area of the state, and we're very proud to be here and proud to serve all of our students. One thing I wanted to mention besides academics is social and emotional learning. During the pandemic, even before the pandemic, we'd been talking about SEL, but I think the need for SEL is more clear than ever before to all teachers and administrators in our district. And we found ways to reach students' needs, but just that human connection of the teacher reading a story on Zoom to their children, or that human connection of the counselor talking to a group of elementary school students while we were in 100% virtual, that human connection of an adult, a trusted adult who the students can go to and ask questions and learn from, whether it's the librarian, the counselor, or another staff member. We just really learned the power of social emotional learning, and we don't want to forget that. We don't want to revert back to all math and reading and science and forget SEL. So I think that was a big takeaway for our staff in Fayetteville.
And so as your staff prepares to start school, or maybe you've already started, have they gotten some additional training and resources on SEL? I know we have counselors that, you know, are well prepared for that, but any new staff, have they gone through anything to, you know, so they're well prepared for handling any challenge that some of these students will come back to school with?
As far as curriculum goes, we are utilizing Choose Love for our K through six, and we're using a program called Habitudes, a national program for our secondary schools. In addition to those two programs, we use Second Step with several of our elementary and middle school counselors. And in addition to those programs, we just want social emotional learning to be embedded throughout the school day. How do families feel when we answer the phone? How do students see two teachers when there's a high level of frustration due to COVID interacting with each other in the hallway? How are students treated whenever another teacher from a different classroom sees them in the hallway? So we want to model social emotional learning, but we also have these programs and curricula which will guide our teaching and instruction. And Arkansas also has a great program called Guide for Life. And we're currently embedding Guide for Life into our K-12 programs. And Guide for Life is something that's available online. Anyone could click and see it at the Arkansas Department of Education. And Guide for Life is another resource that all Arkansas educators are using for social and emotional learning.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that you pointed out some of these resources. I know Second Step, I have not heard of the Choose for Love curriculum, but I know Second Step is used also in the elementary level. And yeah, it's great that the Department of Ed actually has something that most schools in your state are using. So any of these things people can look up online if they want to find out more about the curricula. Let's talk a little bit about how I found you online. So you have the Twitter handle at Curriculum Blog. So tell me a little bit about how that Twitter handle came about and why you chose that Twitter handle.
It is a little funny. It makes people laugh from time to time. And my own two kids disowned me when I started calling myself that on Twitter. But when I started Twitter in 2008, you had people like Bill Ferriter and Steven Anderson, and they had thousands of followers, and they had nicknames, and it may be related to teacher leadership or technology integration, or it may be related to the classroom grade level that a teacher taught. So a lot of people in 2008, 2009 had a different name than their name. And so I thought I need to have a name, and I'm not currently in the classroom. I'm not currently a principal or an assistant principal. What could I do that would be broad enough that would capture my message? At the same time, I had spent 2 years developing a blog, and it was called Curriculum Blog. And the main focus was K-12 curriculum design, unpacking standards, curriculum alignment, curriculum leadership type topics. So I wanted to align my Weebly account or my website with my Twitter account. And so I was just trying to do some branding there at the time. And since that time, that's gone away, and you and I connected through Teach Better. So now I'm doing quite a bit of blogging on Teach Better, and I'm about to unveil a new website, which will be my own website with my own blog, where I have several articles that I've archived or written over the years, including some new ones that are coming out this fall. So I enjoy blogging. And it may sound silly, but I was just trying to kind of follow the people who were already doing something. And it's worked well for me, because I think when people see curriculum, they say, oh, that's what I do. I'm a teacher leader, or I'm an eighth grade science teacher. I'm a superintendent. So I think when people are looking for something that's education, they know they'll go there and they'll find something that's related to K-12 curriculum. So curriculum, and it's evolved over into leadership. I tweet and blog about leadership topics quite a bit. And also just what's going on in K-12 education. If I go to a conference, or if I have a conversation with an assistant principal and it sparks a thought in my mind, I'll tweet that out and share my thoughts or my resources. So I really just get a lot of pride out of sharing online with others. And just this past week, a school in Los Angeles, California, let me know that they had used some of my questions. I had some back to school questions for educators, and they let me know that they had used some of my questions in their faculty meeting for back to school planning. So that means a lot to me when someone else is using a resource or a tool that I've found effective, and it's impacting teachers in a school district, teachers who I've never had the opportunity to meet. So I hope that all teachers have a great kickoff to school year, but that means a lot to me as an author or as a blogger, if someone says, we used your tools or we used your questions for our faculty meeting.
Yeah, I think that's great when you're able to hear back about the fact that somebody was using your materials, right, in a different state or in a different country. That, you know, that really makes you feel good when that's being shared out. And that's kind of why we put that information on the website. So yeah, you mentioned that you're now blogging for Teach Better Team, but you told me in the pre-chat a little bit that you were working at ASCD Edge, and that now they closed their site. So you had a significant amount of blogs up there, and are you moving those blogs then to your website that you're launching soon, or do you still have those blogs somewhere?
Yes, ASCD Edge, really.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Gave me confidence as an educator and as a writer. As I was working on my dissertation, going through grad school at East Carolina University, I would frequently stop because that was a different type of writing style, and I would write a blog. I was reading all these articles and research, and I would write a blog. And at one point, I had thousands and thousands of followers on some of the blogs with ASCD Edge, but ASCD decided to go in a different direction, and they took that blog down for all bloggers. It was open to anyone who was a professional educator around the world and an ASCD member, and they took that down, and I did save and archive those blogs. So I'm not going to put everything back up. Some of it's not current anymore, but I have saved some of the top blogs or some of the ones that were reviewed the most or read the most by other educators, and I do plan to share those on my new website, which is coming soon. I hope it'll be out in the next 3 weeks, but I'm very excited about sharing articles that I've written in the past along with some of the new ones. And it's just how I met you, and it's how I've met several educators. I have friends who are educators on Voxer, and these are people who I met through Twitter chats or I met through following their blog. And a lot of times you'll go to a state or national conference and meet somebody in person for the first time, but you feel like you already have a connection with them because of social media. So that's really changed from when I was a first-year teacher. As a first-year teacher, I would get really excited when ASCD Educational Leadership Journal would come to my mailbox at my house, and I'd read articles, and there was no way to connect with other educators or talk about the articles. But I was excited that I had, you know, people investing in me, or that I could read current research in K-12 education. And so it's really changed now to where you can talk directly to the authors, or you can talk directly to educators in other states like we are today, and you can share ideas and you can connect, and they can say, this is what we're doing in our school. And then you can take that back and use it in professional development with teachers or administrators here in Fayetteville. So being a connected educator is much different than early in my career before Voxer and Twitter and blogs. And I really value all of the different people who have invested in me through social media.
Yeah, you made a couple of good points I wanted to just piggyback on. And, you know, I really like that point about, yeah, meeting those people in person. There's a lot of people over the summer, you know, that are posting social media posts that they haven't either seen somebody, you know, for a year and a half, and now they're going to that in-person conference, or they're meeting somebody for the first time that they connected with online. So yeah, that's really special now that, you know, you develop a relationship with somebody through Twitter or through these online Zooms or groups that you're in. And, you know, like you said, it's changed, it's evolved so much in the past, even just 10, you know, 15 years since you started Twitter. And we talked a little bit in the pre-chat as well about your just that experience writing your doctorate, right? And the academic writing, how that's different than blogging, quite different, right? And it kind of helped you relax, didn't it? When you were trying to finish your dissertation, you kind of took a little bit of a break sometimes and wrote a blog to kind of step away from that academic writing.
It is very relaxing. It helps you reflect on what you believe. It helps you reflect on articles you've read or books you've read, if you've read multiple books about the same topic. And when you get feedback on a blog, it allows you to hear what other people are thinking about that same topic or how that topic's impacted them as a teacher or administrator. But yes, it is very relaxing. I joke at one point, my wife said, if you take all these blogs and put them together, you'd have a doctorate degree. So I think I got a little heavy on the blog writing at one point for a year and a half and didn't do as much with the dissertation writing. So yes, the blogging is much more writing for pleasure.
Yeah, and I kind of wrote on kind of opposite ends of writing my capstone dissertation. You know, I blogged maybe up until 17 or 18, but then I did a lot of my dissertation writing at 19 and 20. And then I started writing for Teach Better team at the end of 2020. So I kind of kept that academic writing just to the academic writing. But now, yeah, I really agree with you. It's so much easier to kind of just put your thoughts out there, put your thoughts on paper and not have to worry about the APA guidelines and the citations and all those types of things. So, well, you're such a busy educator, and tell me a little bit about when you find time for the writing and the blogging.
Certainly have to do it at night and on the weekends, but I enjoy Friday night. You can go to a Friday night football game and you're excited about the outcome of the game and you can't go to sleep. So Friday night from 10 to 1 in the morning or Saturday morning early. Quite often I like to get in a chat called Lead Up Chat, hashtag Lead Up Chat on Saturday mornings. And you get really inspired from a 8:30 to 9:30 1 hour Twitter chat and all the ideas that are shared about the topics. And so after that, I may write a blog based on something I learned from other educators and Sunday afternoons. So I'd say the weekends and Friday nights are when I find time to blog, but it's very challenging to do it during the school day. I think any teacher or administrator would admit there's too much work going on during the day to have time to really think deeply about a blog. But as you're driving between schools, or as you go and visit with different principals, or you leave a meeting with all central office staff or all principals, definitely in the meetings, you're constantly thinking and reflecting. And then sometimes something that you've heard from another educator in your district or online leads to a blog.
So are you the type of person who might do like a voice recording if something comes to you, if you're in that meeting right after the meeting, or if you're taking a break, and just put in a quick voice recording to yourself if you have an idea for the blog so you can get to that later?
I probably should. That's pretty contemporary, but I'm more of a hard copy. I like to grab a post-it note or grab a legal pad and jot down my ideas. Or I like to start sometimes by just brainstorming on a Saturday with 10 bullets and just randomly picking 10 topics and then deciding which one I want to go with to write a blog. But there's often times where you start writing a blog and you don't finish it because you don't have more than a paragraph to write about. So I have started blogs and stopped, or I've revisited a blog 3 years later. But yeah, I like to just constantly have a hard copy notepad around. And when I get that good idea, I like to jot that down. Or if I hear a quote, sometimes a quote at a conference or online, we've had a lot of webinars this past year in lieu of conferences, but a quote from an author or presenter will trigger a blog.
Yeah, I find that so interesting. Like I've gone to a lot of webinars as well. And you know, that's also something I could think about, maybe taking quotes from that. I often just think kind of reflecting on something that's happening, you know, whether it be the start of school or connecting with students as they enter the classroom, those type of things. And yeah, I usually base my blog post off of that. But you told me a little bit, yeah, about the fact that you write several drafts for your blogs. And that's why sometimes some of them might not get published. But then I did see at a time, I don't know if it was February or April, there were like 10 blogs published that you'd written like within the course of over, like a week or two. So sometimes you send a lot of blogs at once, and sometimes you just sit on those drafts and kind of.
I had a lot of blogs that I wrote last summer and last fall, and TeachButter didn't start publishing them until later. So they were kind of sitting on them, but I don't want anybody to think that I wrote 10 in 1 week. So I had a lot over the course of 3 months. And I think at the time that I got on as a writer, they had a lot that were already in the queue and they didn't have room for it. So eventually I kind of was able to get into the rhythm or get into the system to where I could get one a week or one a month. And they did at first post quite a few at the same time. But a lot of my friends asked me that, how do you write so much? And those had been in there for about 7 months, just waiting. But it's always exciting. I woke up this morning and it said, your post on Teach Better is posted online. And, you know, it's kind of exciting to wake up because you may write it 3 months ago. So it's exciting when you wake up and get the email alert that it's posted today. So I like that. That's a good feeling as an author to know that your work's being published.
Yeah, no, I agree. And yeah, I see how that is. Sometimes you do put in something and, you know, it doesn't get published right away. So, and then like I wrote a couple of things maybe 5 weeks apart or so, and they both got published within 3 days of each other. Right. So just based on the topic sometimes, I think too, but you know, some are more relevant than others to publish at a certain date. So
I think they do that. I think Teach Better looks at the topic and they may find five or six authors and then clump that together on a certain day or a certain week. So I think sometimes it doesn't mean your article's bad. It just doesn't fit this month's theme.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. Out of everything we talked about today, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to meet with you, Dana. It's been a pleasure. And it's a quote that I'd like to share with listeners from Jenny Catron. Jenny wrote, "When we fully embrace the reality that complexity is our playing field, it becomes a game changer for how we approach our leadership. We no longer see complexity as a frustration. We see it as an opportunity. Complexity is where our best leadership happens." And I just find that quote to be very inspiring during these complex times. They say we live in a VUCA world. It's volatile. It's changing. It's uncertain. And it's definitely complex. So during times of complexity, we can continue to be frustrated and we can continue to say we've never been here before. How are we going to move forward? But we can also reflect that we made it through the past 15 months. And as educators and connected educators, we'll continue to support each other and we'll continue to move forward. But I really think that's a powerful quote to end on. And it has meant a lot to me during the past 12 months.
Yeah, I definitely would agree. And I'm going to make sure I get some type of a visual of that quote, if that exists on Google, and add to the show notes with that quote. So thank you for sharing that. And where can people connect with you? I know I mentioned your Twitter handle, but do you have also the URL to your upcoming website?
My Twitter handle is at Curriculum Blog. On Voxer, S. Weber, W-E-B-E-R. And the URL for my website is coming soon, but it is the goal is for it to be drstephenweber.com. But when that comes out, I'll send you the link and maybe we can update it on the show.
Sounds great. Well, I look forward to visiting that new site and seeing some of the older blogs that, we'll be able to revisit and see, the relevancy today. And I thank you so much about sharing about your experience, just writing and, being a connected educator. Thanks so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today.
Thank you. Have a great school year.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.